Now for our final spot this afternoon. This has also to do with Danish television. This is Leonard Malone, who will tell about the two Duke Ellington programs, or the double program of a Duke named Ellington, which has been shown at least in the States, I know, and which is being shown these days. The first part was shown on Tuesday. The second part is shown tonight, late tonight. Some of you might be able to see it after the concert on Danish television tonight. So, yeah, it's at 11:30, I think, p.m. And Leonard Malone will tell you about this now. Welcome, Leonard.
First of all, I would like to thank the arrangers of the Ellington Conference for making it possible for me to come here and present the second part of the TV documentary, A Duke Named Ellington. And for your information, the second part is going to be shown tonight at, it's at 11:30. But we're going to all look at it this afternoon, so you don't have to worry about that. The idea for making this film first began to germinate when I had an assignment with the Danish radio to create a radio program or a series of radio programs based on the collection that Mercer Ellington had donated to the Danish radio in the latter part of the 1980s. While I was researching this material, the thing that eventually struck me was that aside from the vast musical treasure that's out there today at East Lensbrugge, there were many taped radio interviews with Ellington in that collection. They had taken place from about 1964 to 1970, and they were made by journalists from New Zealand, England, and a very rare one with Orson Welles from an Orson Welles TV program in 1970. There was also a very strange interview with that was recorded in Japan. I say it was strange because the only time that I've ever heard of all of the material I've researched, Duke Ellington losing his temper with a Japanese woman interviewer. But in any case, I, like all of you here, had been weaned on the music of Ellington all of my life, all of my adult life. So I had some background about the depth and gravity of this man's music. However, what I possibly couldn't have had any insight into was his private life. And by his private life, I'm referring to his relationship with his musical partner and companion, Billy Strayhorn, with his musical philosophy in general, and the facts that contributed to how he was able to maintain this remarkable feat of keeping an orchestra and an organization together for more than or for five decades. So what I found at this collection that Mercer Ellington had donated was that we had a kind of a paradox. On one hand, you had Ellington, who was probably one of the most visible and articulate artists within jazz, yet at the same time, he was a very private man. So based on what we could call, or what we began to call, the Ellington enigma, or In Search of the Duke, I put together a treatment for a film, and after the arduous struggle that most producers go through, namely the task of raising the money, we got to work. And the initial project was taken up by the producer and director, Terry Carter, who was able to get this project going under the auspices of his own production company, the Council of Positive Images. Our research led us to the archives, of course, at the Danish State Radio, much of which you've seen here presented by Henrik Iversen today, and then to Sweden, then later to the BBC in England, and then we came across some unexpected treasures with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and of course some from the United States. In regards to America, we were actually astounded to discover just how little material existed on this great master. Of course, there were the collections of Mr. Chertog and Ernie Smith, but compared to the material, archival material that existed or was filmed and documented in Europe, the material in America was very meager, which should tell us something about the way the American cultural establishment has been regarding this music since the 1940s. I would like to also point out here that the response that we got from the program was very rewarding and overwhelming. First of all, from the international jazz audience and the international press, and lastly, but not least, the musicians. So aside from the awards that this film received, it was especially rewarding for Terry Carter and myself to feel that we had somehow created a classical musical document. One that appealed to the demanding tastes of a jazz audience and at the same time to a broader audience, which we feel is another example that quality jazz on the national media has a wider audience than most TV directors and programmers realize today. In regards to this archival footage, we were so fortunate as to have such an abundance of material to choose from that we could be ruthless in regards to our editing, but not too ruthless, as you will see from the material presented in the second part of this program. We have pieces like Chelsea Bridge, the Ellington solo piano on Lotus Blossom, and probably the only film performance of the classic Black, Brown, and Beige, which was produced for the Danish TV in 1966. These are just to mention a few of the performing pieces, which of course were amplified by the revealing statements of our interviewees, like Clark Terry, Jimmy Hamilton, Ellington's hairdresser and chauffeur, Ron Smith, Herb Jeffries, Leonard Feather, Alvin Ailey, Herbie Hancock, Louis Belson, Cootie Williams and Russell Prokop, Alice Babs, and of course, the maestro himself, Edward Kennedy Ellington. So I think now it's time for us to simply enjoy the second part of A Duke Named Ellington. Thank you.